again there, folks. So the other night I was at a birthday party and I was having a couple of pints with some of the blokes there. And all of a sudden they came out and they began talking about Epstein and that Maxwell woman and Tom Hanks fleeing to Greece and cannibals and Satanists and Hollywood's paedophile elite. And they were both, one of them was my brother, and they were both getting very excited about it all. And they were saying that the only way that all of this evil stuff was going to end was going to be Donald Trump coming out and condemning it. And then they also were saying, well, have you seen this video and have you seen that video? And apparently there's been a few videos being banned. And they were really hooked on all this stuff. And I asked them if this was that QAnon stuff, and they said, yeah, it was. Now, I have to say, I haven't paid any attention whatsoever to the American election cycle this year. I've heard that QAnon thing, that word being bandied about, and people say it's this conspiracy stuff going on in America, but I haven't really paid any attention to that either. But I thought it was interesting because it occurred to me that in 2016, I was very much engaged with the election cycle. I was a bit of a foot soldier in the Great Meme War. I was writing blog articles at the Daily Stormer and posting stuff on Twitter and encouraging everybody to get involved and all of that kind of thing. So I was really in on that whole wave of energy that went on throughout 2016, which, you know, everybody becomes a little bit nostalgic about. But back then, it was all about demographics. And you know, I'd go into work and there was a young lad that would come over and he was kind of getting a little bit engaged with it because of me. And he would be like laughing and saying, well, did you see what Trump said on the news last night? He said something about a Muslim ban and banning it from Muslim countries and all of this. And so all of the memetics, all of the talking points and all of that energy, it was explicitly about demographics, it was about who runs the media, it was about how the anti-white media, it was about the globalist elite was a big thing going on then. But it was much more explicitly politically incorrect. There was this feeling that everybody had had enough of the political correctness, and this was a reaction against it. And so in large part, you would see people posting like Nazi, National Socialist related memes. And the reason for that was because like that's the most politically incorrect thing you can do. I think a lot of people miss the point when people get caught out talking about this stuff these days. Like, but it was done kind of ironically to jam the gears, to culture jam the gears and the religion mores of political correctness. But generally speaking, there was this, it was very creative and it was very high energy and it seemed new and fresh and interesting because it was actually to a large degree grassroots. But it was for the Trump campaign unexpected, and then they kind of endorsed it, they tacitly approved on it. And he would give the odd nudge and a wink. And of course, to the other side, they were just completely appalled by that. And what I think, when I was listening to them talk about this stuff the other night, I thought, isn't this interesting? Because, like, I was aware and engaged with what was going on in 2016. But this is what they're doing now. This is what they're talking about now. And it occurred to me that, well, I mean, there is all of this stuff, these allegations, it obviously seems to be true with the Epstein stuff and all of that. So that's all there. But it also seemed that something was missing as well. It seemed like it was all kind of, well, you know, astroturfed. So, like, where's all the talk about demographics in this one? Where's all of the real issues? And what I also noticed is that it isn't really creative. So what they're doing is saying, well, have you wait for this video to drop about this new rabbit hole that you're going to go down. And so what they've got is this whole mythology is being built for them where they can, within the frame of the QAnon stuff, which, like I say, I've never looked into at all. I'm just going off how people are talking about it in the real world. And they will phrase it like being red-pilled and like a rabbit going down the tunnel and uncovering more and more different conspiracies and different things. But what's missing from all of that is all of the talk of demographics and all of the, like, bringing into question political correctness itself. And it's as if it's been, like, kind of shifted into a more safe zone, which seems kind of paradoxical because, you know, there is some really sick people at the top of the chain, let's say. But it's also like a bit of a problem that I had when the COVID virus first came out, where there's so many narratives coming out all in one time. There'll be a lot of bullshit there, but there'll be some truth at the same time. And so you kind of get lost in it all. You get lost in the weeds. This wasn't so much the case at all in 2016 because it was explicitly racial. It was explicitly about the refugees coming in. It was explicitly about demographics and about political correctness. The economic side of it wasn't as much as what it is now, but I'll come back to that in a bit. And another thing that I've noticed about the QAnon stuff is that it's kind of passive. Whereas in, if I think back of somebody like Andrew Anglin doing like all of the memes of the funniest memes of the day would go on the Daily Storm hour, or people would go on 4chan and all of the new fresh memes would be coming out, and then people would go on Twitter with them and all in comment sections and all of that kind of thing. Well, there doesn't seem really to be much of that at all from the QAnon stuff. Instead, I think in 2016 with the alt-right, it was, like I say, creative and organic. And the impression that I got from listening to these fellas the other night was that they were waiting, they were passively waiting for the next crumb to fall, for the next video to consume, and for them to then go further down the rabbit hole. But there's not so much, because they're waiting for more information about these new narratives, this new mythology, they're waiting from some authority, which by the name would suggest is unknown, and then it'll be a further piece of the jigsaw to put into place, and a little bit further down the rabbit hole they go, and that kind of thing. And so it's switched from a mode of being where you're actively engaged and have a sort of will to power, as in 2016, and now you have people kind of passively waiting for the next link in the chain, the next piece of the story to fall into place. And so it seems to me as if somebody very, very clever has looked at what happened in the alt-right, or in general, that meme warfare of 2016, 2015, and they've studied it. And of course, once Trump was safely into power, the whole thing blew itself apart. But, you know, there was a lot went on. But let's just stick with the censorship, which was crippling. So in a way, I think the people behind it, the people with real power, the deep state, who get a lot of mentions in the QAnon, I think in this case, somebody like that and the people who censored everybody, they have studied the energy behind it and thought, if you want to, we have to replicate this so that we can engage Trump's base and get them on board. But we don't want the really dodgy stuff that was coming out in 2016. So what we're going to do is misdirect them into this other sort of, we'll create new narratives for them. And there will be some truth in there. There is something weird going on with Hollywood elites, that Epstein and all of this kind of thing. There is something very dark going on there. There's no doubt about that. But the problem is, what seems to be missing entirely are the core criticisms of the structure itself, or what the standard sort of points that the alt-right were made. So it's been sanitized for a new election cycle. Like, we'll get some big brains to study what went on in 2016, and we'll make a replica of it, and then people are going to start discussing it and get wrapped up in it and become embroiled in it. And like I say, I saw it in the pub the other night, sitting there at a birthday thing, and they're talking about it amongst themselves. And these people wouldn't be political. That's what they wouldn't normally give a damn about this stuff. And you can see that, so it's actually working. They've made a sort of replica of a dissident movement for this new election cycle. They've purged the one, the previous one has been purged and destroyed, and then they've kind of thought, well, right, what can we do about this? Let's make our own and let's pump it out, and we can engage in the Trump space. We'll give them this to feed on. And it's unbelievably cynical, to be honest. But at the end of the day, it's more safe, because it does what they're talking about, like, it doesn't actually affect their real lives. It's very much abstracted away from things like in 2015, 2016, you had like the refugee crisis was kind of still a big thing. It was very raw. You would go to what was going on, the sexual assaults in places like Cologne, and it was all very raw and visceral. And to a way where this isn't. It's too far gone, because it doesn't affect the daily lives, and it doesn't speak to them. It doesn't speak to the real problems. It doesn't address the structural problems that we're witnessing. And what I find interesting again is that you see, since then, there's more actual institutions being created by the remnants of the alt-right, or whatever it would call today. There's actual parties, there's Patriotic Alternative and a National Justice Party are just coming out, really new. And so it's as if, the deep state or the CIA, whoever, have been studying what's going on in 2015-16. Those very groups are now gone on, out into the new, into the real world, and they're forming new institutions, like off the internet, which is going to be an interesting thing. We'll see how that plays out. But that seems to be the way things are going now. So I thought I'll just leave it there. It's interesting to contrast the energy of the Trump campaign of 2016 and the one that we have now. And I think that's why I just haven't been very interested in it. It just doesn't speak to us. It just doesn't grab us by the collar and say, you've got to wake up to these real facts. But it's obviously, it appeals to somebody, because they're talking about it even in England and pubs. People who wouldn't normally be interested in an election cycle at all. But again, I just think it's kind of too passive. It's just waiting for the next video to drop, for the next piece of the puzzle. Whereas in 2016, we were doing all that ourselves. There was this idea that we are forcing our narratives into the discourse. That's what it was all about. We are going to blow apart political correctness. And now it's like, sit back and wait for the next narrative. Consume narrative. Get excited for next narrative. So we'll see how it goes. Thanks for listening, folks. And I'll catch you later.